Tom Haberstroh joins me to talk about American democracy, basketball analytics, and Cam Thomas as a radioactive can of peas. All this and more coming up right now on this episode of Divine Intervention. Is it real, son? Is it really real, son? Let me know it's real, son. If it's really real. John Gennaro, count me in! The first words belong to Method Man, for short, Mr. Meth, moving on your left, but the rest of them belong to me. Welcome to Divine Intervention, a self-help podcast about basketball. My name is Dan Devine, and before we get rolling, three things that I'm grateful for today. One, I get paid by Yahoo Sports to write about the NBA and talk about it into this microphone and into this camera. Two, I live in a city where I can take a short subway ride to see NBA basketball live, which I did on Monday night covering Bucks-Nets at Barclays Center for an article that you might already be able to read at Yahoo Sports, so go check that out. And number three, I get to talk to a guest who is much, much smarter than me. Joining me today, he is a decorated veteran of the numbers game and, as you can see in the shot, a contributing member of a functioning democracy question? He is an award-winning columnist and analyst, formerly of ESPN, Bleacher Report, and NBC Sports. These days, you can catch him at Meadowlark Media, where he co-hosts the great podcast Basketball Illuminati with Amin Al-Hassan, on broadcasts of Portland Trailblazers games as the team's new analytics insider, which is very exciting, and on his Substack, The Finder, where he does brilliant things like claim Victor Wembanyama is a point guard, TK, and try to figure out where James Harden is going next, like already after this. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend and yours, Tom Haberstroh. Tom, welcome to Divine Intervention. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Thank you for giving a shout out that I voted today. I think that's what you were alluding to. I took my daughter to the voting booth, and she got a little sticker that said future voter, which was fun.
It's great.
Because as you know, there's nothing on the planet Earth that kids love more than stickers. So that's the key to their heart.
That's exactly right. And it's one of the better advertisements that we have for being involved in any kind of institutional process. You do get a sticker at the end of it. And I'm 41 years old and I still like getting the sticker. So I'm looking forward to getting out there today after we finish this up. But first, Tom, we're going to have some fun with small sample sizes and early season stats. I'm going to unveil a very special proprietary analytical model right here on Divine Intervention. And we're going to talk a little bit about the new look Clippers. But first, before we do anything else on Divine Intervention, we always operate from a place of joy. So, Tom Haberstroh, what is something from the world of basketball that brought you joy during the last week of NBA action?
Oh, man, I'm such a homer, Dan. You talk about how you're, you know, within a subway ride or whatever to NBA basketball. And I am, too. I have a little, like, trolley, a streetcar that I can take from my house that takes me to the arena here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And though I am the Portland Trailblazers analytics insider and I'm covering this team like a lunatic from the East Coast, it is insane that I'm doing this. As JJ Redick likes to call it, our friend JJ Redick, we are sickos. Okay. but there's an NBA team here just down the street, and I have the privilege of hanging out and watching this Charlotte Hornets team as well, which is being narrated by, I think, the most excitable, most enthusiastic, sometimes deranged joy is Eric Collins. Okay. Eric Collins Absolutely. Calling NBA games is just pure dopamine. It is so unadulterated, straight gas. And there was a highlight from a recent game against, it was Dallas. Okay. Dallas. Nick Richards, who is about as like anonymous of an NBA player as there is. Okay. My wife's going to hate that because she's go blue. She's a big time Kentucky Wildcat fan. So Nick Richards is a backup center for the Charlotte Hornets. And I don't know, John, if you can play this audio during the podcast.
Oh yeah. Don't worry. Super producer John Gennaro is on it. Do not worry about it. So when you wrap up, we'll go right to the audio.
It is amazing. Nick Richards just kind of like dribbles a couple times, runs I wouldn't even say it's a fast break. It was like a transition play.
Yeah, it's a break.
It's a break, open court. Like he's trotting down the floor. And So he's 7 feet tall and he kind of lays it in like a backwards right-handed layup on the left side. And Eric Collins goes bananas.
Flat jumper missed by Kyrie Irving. Hornets have the basketball. Nick Richards running the break. Oh, and Nick Richards, I love it. Oh my goodness. Glorious for Nick Richards.
You would have thought this was like the NBA Finals,
right,
and he
it's
just
a game
won
seven,
game
right.
seven.
I also love that it's just as a very direct statement. I love it. Like, I have to let you know as loud as possible what I'm feeling right now, and I love it.
Yes, yes. And you know what, Dan? I think we as an NBA media, I talked about this with Big Waz yesterday at Count the Digs. It was like, man, we're so good at complaining and being skeptics
right.
and cynics about the NBA game. And it's just, there's so much room for just being excited about the game and being excited about basketball. So much of NBA content is about draft picks and, you know, the trade exceptions, the two-way contract, what that means, and exhibit 10s. And we get caught down in the minutia. And sometimes it's just so great, Dan, to be excited about basketball. And Eric Collins brings it on a nightly basis about a team that has not won a lot of games the last few years. It has been tough sledding for Eric Collins in terms of like, hey, it's not a great basketball product on a nightly basis. But this moment just crystallizes what I love about basketball. I love about Eric Collins as a commentator. And I do think that we need more of this, is more homerism, more, you know, I think as journalists, we want to be objective, but sometimes you need this. And as someone who is doing broadcasts for the Blazers, and Kevin Calabro is, in my book,
one of the greatest of all time. Absolutely.
All time. Like on the Mount Rushmore of play-by-play guys. And it's just, it's great. It's great to hear people just so excited and have a great time while doing their job.
1,000%. It is one of the fundamental underpinnings of this show that, like, while it is important to look at things in a, you know, holistic perspective and to consider the numbers and to consider the context, also, we are here, like, all of this is putting the ball into a basket. Like, all of it is about fun. And if we can't, like, all of us started doing this because something about it lit us up at some point. And if you can't, you know, relocate that and sort of seize it, you know, that is to your detriment. So absolutely. I love that this is what you brought. I love why you brought it. I'm also interested in why you brought it, because I think that I don't know that people would necessarily see that dovetailing with your new responsibilities with the Trailblazers, because I think when people think about analytics or they think about somebody being like focused on the numbers, they might not necessarily see that as part and parcel of joy. But I don't think that you see it that way. I think that you see it as something that helps elevate your appreciation of the game.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why I have this job, is because I think there's only one out of 30 teams who have an analytics insider on their TV broadcast. Okay. So this is not a common thing. And it is scary. Analytics is scary. It's math. Like people feel like a lot of times the word analytics is very stigmatized. It's very loaded. And oftentimes it's just information, right? It's just, oh, I counted the number of times that Shaedon Sharpe passed the ball to DeAndre Ayton. That's analytics now. It's like, you
right.
know, like people, I think, have a misinterpretation of what analytics is. And yes, there is a lot of math involved sometimes, but so much of the advanced stats, Dan, as you know, isn't really all that advanced. I remember right. in 2010 calling, or 2010 for the Heat Index, when it was like me, Brian Windhorst, Kevin Arnovitz, and Michael Wallace covering the Miami Heat and LeBron. And Mark Stein and Brian Windhorst just being like, hey, can you explain points per possession for me? Like, why should we use offensive rating, or why should we use offensive efficiency?
Right.
And back then, like 10 years ago, the mainstream, the national reporters, it didn't take long for them to be like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense
right.
to have just controlling for pace, so that like the team that just plays helter-skelter basketball that has 150 possessions, we should grade them on the same scale as someone that slows it down, Larry Brown style, Nate McMillan style, 80 possessions a game. Like, one's a really good offense and one could be a really bad offense. and we just wouldn't know by basic raw totals. So it long-winded way to say that so much of what analytics is about is scary and mathy and unapproachable, like the idea of it. But I want to make it approachable. I want people to have fun and learning, like, oh, the Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic two-man game is the most efficient play in basketball, and here's why. And right. that might be math-based, is like, here's the points per possession, but really what we want to do is have this analytical finding make you just have so much fun watching a bunch of film of beautiful basketball. And maybe before analytics, you wouldn't have known that, or you wouldn't have been sitting there watching 90 minutes of just magic on a basketball floor. But because of analytics, or because of Second Spectrum, or because of Synergy Sports, we're able to kind of bring the great things about basketball. And I always want to root it to basketball. A lot of this is acronyms like defensive box plus minus. What is that? Sure. We had this opportunity the other night, Dan, that we were like talking about DeAndre Ayton's defense. And we had this debate before going to air. Should we talk about his defensive box plus minus? And I was like, that I don't feel like is good TV. I feel like sure. we can show the ways that DeAndre Ayton has been effective defensively and talk about that and maybe say over air, hey, he's one of the top defenders in the early going by many defensive metrics. But I do think getting bogged down in the acronyms and the math of analytics scares a lot of the audience away. And I've always believed that. And I want to just kind of not dumb it down, but make it friendly. I want to make analytics friendly and just not something that I think a lot of basketball, quote unquote, purists are intimidated by.
Well, it's Steve Jobs needing the Macintosh to smile, right? Or to say hello. Like that was the argument for like this thing was terrifying. We need to make people feel comfortable with it being in their home. It needs to look friendly and it needs to say hi. And so if you can do that with maybe not, you know, BPM metrics or whatever, but like if you're able to do that with just the idea of this is going to help you not even necessarily understand, it might help you enjoy this thing better. Yeah. Or more, or in a different way, adding a pathway to having a little bit more fun with this thing that we're all devoting our free time to and, you know, being fanatical about in one way or another. I think that's an awesome thing. I think it's a credit to the Blazers for doing it. And I'm stoked to see you getting that opportunity to help people see things the way that you see them a little bit more often. We're going to move from a place of joy to a place of, I think, maybe a more curious place. This is not my beautiful house. I'm not sure exactly what it is. James Harden showed up in New York City last night with the Los Angeles Clippers. He just arrived. And the beginning of the James Harden era with the LA Clippers, it opened with a loss, a 14-point loss to the Knicks, 111-97. James Harden, 31 minutes, 17 points, 6 assists. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't see second one of this game because I was at, as I mentioned earlier, I was at Nets Bucks. But my understanding is started alongside the other three, you know, Hall of Fame wings and Nivica Zubac there being the glue holding it all together. He got a little bit of run with the backups and some opportunity to sort of cook on his own there. I'm just, if you are able to check this one out, I'm curious what you saw in Harden's sort of first run with the Clippers.
You know, I think when we look at this at Madison Square Garden, he has not played a minute of training camp or preseason basketball. He's coming in with the train going and he's trying to jump on and say, right. like, oh, I'm now going to be like the focal point of this offense with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And oh, by the way, Russell Westbrook, who has the history's highest usage rate season of all time. So there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And you saw that in game one. And I want to just like put a disclaimer. We're small sample size theater here. And James Harden playing game one without any ramp up with this team or practice with this team, it's like asterisk times like 10. Okay.
Sure.
So what we saw at Madison Square Garden is really a preseason game for these guys. And even, you know, when you look at the actual game that we saw was, it was close up until like the last 10 minutes of the game. And that's when James Harden showed a lot of fatigue and the team sure. wasn't able to pick up that slack. Paul George was not excellent. And I think when you look at Ty Lue's comments after the game and James Harden's comments after the game, it was very much, hey, he's not in game shape yet. And we should have everything, take everything with a grain of salt. So one thing I wrote on my Substack was, Russell Westbrook starting is really interesting because what we kind of think about Russell Westbrook of being this high usage ball hog or someone who's just not willing to share the rock with other people and has a limited half court impact. Well, so far this season, when he's playing next to those other starters, he has a 15% usage rate, Dan. 15%. That is a role player. And Russell Westbrook has taken a backseat in Clipperland. And I think with James Harden coming in the fold, he's much more recalibrated than he was with the Lakers. And I think that's notable, is that Russell Westbrook has not demanded to take every other shot on the floor. And he was efficient. James Harden was efficient. But it wasn't enough for me to say, oh, this is going to be a title contender right out of the box.
It's a great point about Russ, because I think that was something that was there was a lot of uncertainty about whether he would ever accept that kind of curtailed role. Even if he was put next to some of the greatest players of all time, would he, somebody who had been so maximalist for so much of his career, ever feel comfortable in a smaller space? And that he has been so productive in that way, that he's been willing to sort of sublimate his game is, I think, a really good sign and a really good start for a Clippers team that's going to have a lot to figure out over the next few months.
And I think they're going to, like, we're talking about this Clippers experiment as if it's going to continue going forward. But like, as I look at this and as I've written, James Harden has been miserable at just about every stop of the way the last four years. And he's made right. four trade demands or been traded four times, three times, where in 2021, 2022, 2023, he's made trade demands every step of the way. So I want to believe that we'll still be talking about Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden as an entity for the Clippers. But it's only a matter of time before he just gets bent out of shape about something, which is why I wrote that piece, making my call that he will eventually make another trade demand, because what is it? The scorpion and the frog. That's just who he is. That's just who he is. And we'll see if this works going forward. But so far, the returns are okay.
The interesting thing to me also is just in the short term, because I think it's very reasonable to look at it and say in the longer term, things end badly, otherwise they don't end. And that's usually where we go with James Harden. But the reason that you can start all four of those guys together right now is that Terrence Mann is out injured. And Tyronn Lue at the start of the season was very clear, like, that's my starting four. I'm going to, they love him, clearly valued him very highly in all the trade negotiations, did not want to let him go. I'm wondering, when he's able to go and come back, how do you see that rotation sort of shaking out? Do you see him reasserting himself in that lineup, or do you think that he maybe comes back off the bench like he had been doing prior to Lue elevating him?
I think Russell Westbrook is probably better suited to be the second unit anchor than, say, Terrence Mann. And I think Terrence Mann should be starting eventually. I just don't think it's necessarily a situation like the Lakers, where it's like, we can put all of the starting lineup dysfunction on Westbrook.
Right.
But I do think that is probably the optimal starting lineup, is that Terrence Mann can be just this super hyper, do-it-all role player, and kind of give some relief to Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, because they need to help James Harden close games. So defensively, I think it makes a lot more sense. And so Russell Westbrook and Norm Powell anchoring that second unit, which is now going to have Mason Plumlee out, it looks like, after being carted off the floor, which is a big deal. Man, then I think about Bones Highland's also there. So it's
right.
This is not going to be an easy chess game for Ty Lue, but he's one of the best at managing these egos, and he's going to certainly earn his contract here over the next 6 months or so, trying to manage all these egos that he has to stroke.
Yeah, last thought on it for me is just that it reminds me that the choice to start with the four superstars in the lineup reminds me a little bit of Steve Kerr saying, well, we have six starters. Chris Paul is not going to begin his time with us coming off the bench. We have six starters. And then you'll see maybe there's some attrition or some injuries that solve that problem in the short term for you, no matter what. And B, you give everybody a chance. Well, start like this. Rather than insulting anybody or putting anybody's nose out of joint right away, let's give it a try. See how it looks. And then maybe everybody comes to the realization at around the same time, like, the best thing for us is going to be to stagger the lineups this way. And then, you know, Chris Paul winds up being gangbusters off the second unit for the Warriors, and the Warriors sort of fall into place. Maybe something similar winds up happening for the Clippers once they get their full complement of bodies back. We'll move from the Clippers to the main thrust of today. We were talking about small sample sizes, and you said, you know, when you're engaging in small sample size theater, you don't want to put too much stock in any one thing. Yes. I respect that, Tom, but I'm here to firmly disagree in this particular context. When you've created an instrument as finely calibrated as the one that I'm bringing to you today, it's ironclad. There's no turning back from it. There's no way around it.
Okay.
You are a Wake Forest Demon Deacon. Am I correct?
That's right. Class of 08. Shouts to the Deeks. Yes.
One of your favorite players of all time is Muggsy Bogues, correct?
That is, I think, an understatement. I think he might be number one. Yeah. Ish Smith, also a Deke, is up there. Muggsy, Ish, it's tough. But yeah, I'll put the 1A and 1B.
Next time we'll have to make a different acronym. But today we're going to go with, as we evaluate some early season storylines and trends.
Okay.
We're going to use a specific instrument that I've adapted here for Divine Intervention. To measure the utility of game gatherings when the season is young. That's Muggsy. We're going to grade early season storylines.
Wait. Well, you can't just keep moving after that. What is it? So what is it?
We are measuring the utility of game gatherings when the season is young. Muggsy. Ladies and gentlemen, we're bringing the Muggsy scale to Divine Intervention. Tom Haberstroh, you're going to help me go through things on a scale of 1 to 5 Muggsys today. How do you feel about that?
Okay, so 1 to 5 Muggsys, 5 being I'm super confident that this is going to continue. And then one is this is going to have no importance on the season. Yeah. Throw it out.
One, no significance in the grand scheme of things. 5, it's so significant that it's basically that picture of Muggsy Bogues with Manute Bol, the most significant thing that could ever exist.
Yes. Okay. All right. I love this. This is. I've never been more excited on a podcast in my life than Divine Intervention right now. So let's do this.
All right. So we're going to start with not in your backyard there, but in your adopted home, 3,000 miles away through fiber optic cable. You have been, as you're contributing to the Portland Trailblazers broadcasts. And one thing that stood out to me as I started digging through the stats, because you got to do your research when Tom Haberstroh comes on your show. Before this season, only 5 players had averaged 20 points per game on a true shooting percentage of 575 or better by age 20. Shaquille O'Neal, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic, Zion Williamson. There's 2 guys doing it this year. One is a very tall Frenchman that you might be familiar with. And the other is Shaedon Sharpe of the Portland Trailblazers, who is already cresting 20 points per game on above average true shooting. On a scale of 1 to 5 Muggsys, Shaedon Sharpe's already one of the best 22 and under players in this league.
22 and under. So I'll go with a 4 Muggsys. 4 Muggsys here with Shaedon Sharpe, and here's why. You mentioned it. He's 20 years old. He's a half a year younger than Brandon Miller and the Thompson twins, who were top 5 picks in the 2023 draft. So he is, by all accounts, a really good NBA player and also one of the youngest NBA players, which usually doesn't happen. Shaedon Sharpe had a really solid rookie season, not spectacular until the last 10 games of the season when let's say the Blazers were shorthanded and Shaedon Sharpe put on an absolute show, averaging about 10 or 20 points a game, 5 assists per game. It was just like a coming out party for Shaedon Sharpe. I was a skeptic in the sense that, hey, the competitive, I mean, like the opponent, the competition level wasn't as high as it could have been. And so I was curious to see if he was able to maintain this year. And oh my goodness, Dan, he has been sensational in ways that I think we need to talk about outside of the scoring column. Because as you were saying that stat, I looked up that stat this morning. I was looking at Shaedon Sharpe's like age and his ability to score 20 points a game at this age, and you brought up the true shooting percentage. I think I had it here that there was only 17 players that had averaged this amount at this age, and then I did like the whole caveat of like, what about if we look at true shooting percentage?
Yeah.
And I got it down. It's just amazing, Dan, that we both did the same exact thing. And I was just like, wait, but that only speaks to a little bit of what has been so awesome about Shaedon Sharpe this year. His 3-point block to save the game the other night on Luke Kennard was one of the best defensive highlights we will see all season long. It was Zion at Duke-esque. It was Victor Wembanyama-esque. And this dude is a shooting guard. And he's making this shot block at a critical moment. And yes, part of the reason why he needed to close out that far is because he lost Luke Kennard on that play.
Right.
But it shows the growth, Dan, because last year, I don't know if Shaedon Sharpe makes that play or makes the recognition like, oh, I got to go chase him down. He might have just said, you know, yep, blew it. This year, he is making that play and executing in a way that I know the Portland coaches are ecstatic about. Now, it's not just about the block shots because he has a whole bunch of them this year. His block rate's up 30%. His assist rate's up 40%. And his free throw attempt rate has doubled over last year. And it's one thing I noticed at Summer League was he was much better at drawing contact. And I had it in my notes. It's like, okay, can this translate to next season? And so even though the scoring average jumps out 20 points a game, which is double any Blazer at this age in franchise history. The highest was Bassey Telfair, 9.5 points, I think it was, as a 20-year-old. So this, even though we're talking about, oh, there's a lot of 20-year-olds who've never done this before, like even in franchise history, he's doubling the best that was previous to this season. So I think the age, the productivity in the scoring column, but also just everything else, he's a lot more polished. And I think Chauncey Billups did something the other night that I was like, yo, this is quite a statement from the coach. He compared Shaedon Sharpe to Devin Booker and said, I want him to be more like Devin Booker. I think he can have a Devin Booker career. And he was essentially saying Devin Booker had some tough years starting out where he didn't have the best complementary pieces, but he was really developing as a scorer and he wanted Shaedon Sharpe to do that too. And man, he's showing himself.
And there's, you know, any number of questions about how this all pans out when you get, you know, Scoot Henderson has been missing time. Anthony Simon's been out, but all you can do is when you are afforded an opportunity, take advantage of it as, you know, as much as humanly possible. And for Shaedon Sharpe to extend that this early, I think if you're a franchise looking for building blocks, you're looking for cornerstones and looking for signs of growth that you can believe in moving forward, seeing this kind of start from Shaedon Sharpe has to be incredibly encouraging. Yeah. Perhaps less encouraging, we'll shift over to a team that you just saw. You mentioned the big block at the end of the game there. The Memphis Grizzlies just had a couple of outings with those Portland Trail Blazers, and you got a good look at them. Lost once and nearly did it again on Sunday. Game they were trailing by 12 with just over 8 minutes to go before ripping off a hellacious, potential like season-saving 26-2 run to close it out and get their first win. Despite getting off the schneid, though, owning the NBA's worst record and a bottom five net rating. Scale of 1 to 5 Muggsies, the Grizzlies are the worst team in the NBA.
I'm going to go with one Muggsy.
Now, why is that?
Okay, so let's start off with one of my favorite metrics is adjusted net ratings. So this is from dunksandthrees.com, Taylor Snar's website, which you should subscribe if you haven't already. What it does is it takes your offensive rating, which is points per 100 possessions, your defensive rating, points allowed per 100 possessions, and then it adjusts for your strength of schedule. So if you've got a really tough strength of schedule, offensively, like if you've been playing some really tough defenses, it'll adjust and say, hey, you get a little extra credit there. You've had a really tough schedule there. We're going to give you a couple points there based on your opponents. And then conversely, if your defense has been playing really good offenses, it will make the adjustment the other way too. And if you look at the Memphis Grizzlies adjusted net rating in the early season, so it's adjusting for your schedule, The Memphis Grizzlies are checking in at 15th in the NBA.
Straight in the middle of the league.
Middle of the pack. They had almost like the Jekyll and Hyde of the back-to-back with the Blazers, where like in the first game, they had a commanding lead, 10-point lead with 3 minutes left, and then the Blazers ran the table and won the game in overtime. The flip side happened the other night where the Blazers had a nice little lead, and then the Grizzlies just ran away with it. Desmond Bane is so good, man. It's so weird to see a guy who's just like a total meathead out there, Dan. Like,
he looks like a strong
weird?
Safety. He's like, or maybe even like a defensive end. He's like an absolute, you know,
he looks like Aaron Donald out there. Like, yeah, he doesn't right. have a neck, and he's just, it feels like he shouldn't be able to shoot a basketball. Right. Like, he's so swole. And it's just weird. Like, the only one I can think of off the top of my head, like, is it David Wesley? Like, the only one who can, Like, that might be my Hornets bias going here, is just like the idea of a guy who's just like built like that in an NBA uniform. You just never really see it. He's so good. Jaren Jackson Jr. is not a five. And it's so amazing to see Bismack Biyombo starting for an NBA team. And it's like Memphis Grizzlies. He played 0.2 seconds in game one of that set. And then he was starting the next night because Xavier Tillman was a late scratch. So they are missing bodies. Luke Kennard was in a shooting slump. Memphis Grizzlies are going to be fine. I do want to take this opportunity to kind of thump my chest a little bit, because a lot of the analytics, a lot of the smartest guys in basketball, Kevin Pelton and John Hollinger, their metrics, their projection systems have Memphis Grizzlies as the number one team in the Western Conference in regular season wins. Both projections had the Memphis Grizzlies number one. And at the Finder, I do this like Tom's title tiers, which is me just basically saying, oh, they're tier one title contender, tier two, tier three. I actually did not think the Memphis Grizzlies were a title contender, period. And here's why. The Ja Morant stuff is just really icky. It's like, I haven't heard good things about that situation. I also think that Steven Adams' injury, he was like their identity as a just going to crush the offensive boards and get these second chance opportunities and anchor the defensive side of the thing so that Jaren Jackson can float and block shots and all those things. They just don't have a lot of depth right now, and they're battling injuries. And I don't love the fact they didn't really make much additions this offseason. So I was selling a lot of my Memphis Grizzlies stock this offseason. But I got to say, worst team in basketball, that's going too far. I'm going to go with a one on the Muggsy scale.
Well, that's good. So we've started out not all the way over on both ends of the spectrum, but a pretty wide berth in our first two. Let's see where we fall on our third. We'll go to from the team that you've been covering pretty closely to one that I covered last night. I was at Barclays Center, as I mentioned earlier, for Bucks versus Nets. And this is not your father's Milwaukee Bucks. I guess if your father is Mike Budenholzer. Here are the Bucks finishes in defensive efficiency since 2018, according to Cleaning the Glass. Second, first, 10th, 14th in a season that Brook Lopez only played 13 games with a back injury, and fourth. Right now, season one under Adrian Griffin, 27th. Yikes. On a scale of 1 to 5 Muggsies, the Bucks are bad at defense now.
Wow. I'm going to go with 3.
Right in the middle.
I'm right in the middle on this one. I'm not willing to go one way or the other. It's a wait and see for me. Like, I do think Cam Thomas in some ways is drop coverage kryptonite, you know, because he's the greenest of green lights. And if you're going to, right? He is that slime in Wet Hot American Summer, right? Where it's just like,
yes,
that nuclear waste that was just there, green, right? Is that
it gives us the talking can of peas, right?
That is Cam Thomas the talking can of peas, or is would that
I think it's now canon on Divine Intervention that Cam Thomas is a radioactive can of peas. I think that's exactly right. I'm gonna have to only refer to him as such from here on out.
We did it. How proud are you right now?
I feel very good about this.
So when you look at like, who are you going to be upset about? Like, who is going to exploit a drop coverage with Brook Lopez just sinking into the paint? It's Cam Thomas. He is, I don't think is any coincidence that he went off for 45 points against that coverage. He's He's someone who's always just tunnel vision. I'm going to get this bucket. I'm going to pull up from 15 feet. I'm going to pull up from three. First time this season that he really started going from deep. And the Bucks just had no answer for that. And so I think it was a little bit of an illusion to say that they are a mess defensively because, hey, the Brooklyn Nets just dropped, what was that, 100? How many points did they score last night?
I think it was 125 and 101 possessions. It was a big number.
Yeah.
Oh, the big number. Here I am talking to Tom Haberstroh, and I'm out here saying the big number.
God, you are just talking me up. Thank you so much, Dan. That's another drop. So I think I'm going with three because I think it's going to take some time with Damian Lillard getting acclimated. It is a big red flag to me that Terry Stotts resigned in the preseason from the assistant coaching ranks. Like, Dan, that must have like hit you a certain way, right? Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard's guy is just going to walk away from a championship contending team. Like this doesn't smell right over here.
And so some of this is, I wrote about this overnight into the morning, which is why I look so beautiful and haggard right now at Yahoo Sports. But Damian Lillard, lowest usage rate since 2015, fewest shot attempts of his career right now. And some of that, you know, Adrian Griffin was talking about it, you know, maybe he's being, because he's trying to be too much of the point guard, maybe, but trying to be a little bit, you know, too magnanimous to his teammates, a little bit too unselfish. Dame saying he's sort of trying to figure out where he fits in. You want know who might have maybe been able to help Damian Lillard figure out where he fits into the context of a half-court offense? Might have been Terry Stotts, the guy who built, you know, consistent elite ones around him for nearly a decade. To the defensive point, I mean, the offense bleeds into the defense a little bit because when they've been stagnant or when they've, you know, taken bad shots or had bad turnovers, it kickstarts their other teams out in transition, and the Bucks have been awful in transition defense, not getting back. Some of it is off of live ball turnovers. Some of it's just like you miss a shot, you're not busting it back, and other teams are running it down their throats. The Nets were looking to push off of everything last night. So that is something that Adrian Griffin, a, you know, longtime defensive assistant, is going to have to tighten up. Some of it, though, and I think this is what's going to bear watching for me, I think you're right. I think to look at it and say that they have just, you know, they've lost whatever made them special on it. It's not so much that they've lost it. It's that they're trying to find other things.
Yeah.
And so they know how good they are in drop coverage. They know how good they can be when they go smaller with Giannis and Bobby Portis up front and they switch everything. They hardly ever played zone. They're playing a ton of it early in the season. They went with the 2-3 a ton last night. Part of the reason why is because they're trying to stop dribble penetration and they're having no luck doing it because, as it turns out, when you swap Jrue Holiday and Javon Carter and Wesley Matthews for, you know, Dame Lillard and Campaign and Malik Beasley, your point of attack defense takes a little bit of a hit. So yeah, all of these things are interconnected and they're sort of trying stuff out. Giannis, I was able to talk to him briefly last night, and one thing he said to me was, I don't think we're trying to find an identity. I think we know our identity. I think we're trying to find what works, and we've got to be good at everything. So they're playing a long game. Like, we've got to try all this stuff now to get our reps in, because what was the knock on those Coach Bud teams? They knew exactly how to win regular season games, but then when it was time to play left-handed in the postseason, they didn't have the other pitches in their arsenal. And this is, I think, that's the goal right now. But it can lead to things looking a little bit clunky in the process and sometimes giving up 45 points to Cam Thomas. Tom, who, thank you so much for setting me up in this beautiful segue. He is the subject of our next Muggsy. I've not gotten to update the numbers just yet, but at the start of this week, there were 9 players in the NBA who were in the top 15 in both points per game and usage rate. This list includes 3 MVPs: Joel Embiid, Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant. 3 more All-NBA selections: Luka Doncic, Donovan Mitchell, De'Aaron Fox. A 7th All-Star in Anthony Edwards. The meathead you were just referring to, Desmond Bain. And Cam Thomas. And this is before he goes out and drops 45 on the Bucks' head like a building. On a scale of 1 to 5 Muggsies, Cam Thomas, legit number one option on good offense.
Oh, wow. Legit number one option on a good offense. Cam Thomas. I'll go with a 4 here because I'm seeing a lot of Isaiah Thomas vibes from Cam Thomas as a small. He's not small. He's more like 6'4" and, you know, Isaiah Thomas. But like a lead guard who just gets buckets creatively. He's such a great finisher. He's a great in the midi range. He's got so many tools in his toolkit. There was a shot the other night, Dan, I don't know if you saw it, where his feet were backwards, like his feet were turned to the sideline and like away from the hoop, and he just turned and hit like this fadeaway. Like what? Like who tries that in an NBA game? Like that's a horse shot.
He's like the pure hooper prince that was promised. He is like the ball don't stop alt legend of this current NBA season.
Here's what I will to back that up. 28.7 points per game. Okay. He's averaging 2.4 assists. In a heliocentric era, Dan, this is like heresy. This is just like the idea that you could average 28 points per game and not average 10 assists a game too. Like Luka, we're in the age of Luka, Giannis, Trae Young, Jokic, who else? Just like Russell Westbrook. If you're going to average 25 points a game, you have to average 10 assists a game. That, like even Embiid this year, he's averaging 6-7 assists a game. Mm-hmm. It's just, that is the way the NBA is going, is guys are getting thrown the ball to not only score 30 a game, but you have to create for others. Cam Thomas is like, nah, not me. Here's a list of guards in NBA history who have averaged 28 points per game and less than 3 assists per game. Guards, okay? I'm not talking bigs where you get a lot of just, you know, big dudes who just catch and dunk. 28 points per game, less than 3 assists among guards. No one since George Gervin in 1982. Wow. And if you want to even count him as a guard, like he's a wing. It's not like a lead guard like Cam Thomas. We've never seen this. We've never seen this. Dan, someone who is just pure bucket getter. Cam Thomas is one of one. And I love it. I'm here for it because so much of basketball and analyzing basketball, Dan, is... Okay, yeah, but do it in the Stu Gatz way. Do it in the playoffs. Do it in when you're a lead guy. Cam Thomas was scoring 30 points off the bench, and people are like, yeah, but throw him against the starting unit, see if he can actually lead good offense. And the Brooklyn Nets are fine. They're good. They're solid. The irony is that like in the playoffs last year, they just needed a guy to penetrate and create his own shot. And the guy was sitting there the entire time. It is Cam Thomas, and I love it. I love what I'm seeing from him. There have been 36 occasions for a 6'5 or shorter, averaging 28 points per game. Allen Iverson, Steph Curry, Russ, Trae Young, Gilbert Arenas, Donovan Mitchell. And then there's Cam Thomas. And what I love about him, he's got no filter. He hit that logo Lillard shot while Lillard was guarding him. He pulled up from the logo and nailed it with Dame guarding him. It's just, it's beautiful. It is amazing basketball. I'm rooting for it. I'm not putting it as a five because Brooklyn Nets, we'll see if they can be a top 10 offense for the rest of the season, but I'm here for it.
First off, this is incredible. This is that we've gotten both Cam Thomas as a radioactive can of peas and Cam Thomas as the modern day Iceman. It's just like the two, it's maybe on the, like, this is like its own 1-5 Muggsies. Like Cam Thomas is the, we've never seen this before. And Victor Wembanyama is the, we've never seen this before. Little to big. I like having the bookends there. It's beautiful, beautiful stuff. I got to see if I could find I'm trying to figure out a five here of my remaining Muggsies, my remaining questions for this Muggsy.
I got one for you. I got one
okay.
for you.
Let's hear it.
Are you buying Kelly Oubre?
This was the next thing I was going to say. Tom, we are sharing a brain today.
No.
I haven't voted, but I'm going to vote for you in my heart here. Here we go on the Kelly Oubre. It's another arcane stat. This is as of yesterday morning. I have not updated yet since the Sixers blowout win last night. Six players with a usage rate north of 20% and a true shooting of over 650. I think he might have dipped below that. Jokic, Steph, Paul George, Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Kelly Oubre Jr. My question for on scale of 1-5 Muggsies was, Kelly Oubre on the Sixers is this year's Wiggins on the Warriors or AG on the Nuggets? A guy that had that like kind of incredible pedigree, meandered and didn't really figure out how to get in where he fits in, then finds himself in that lower usage role on the right kind of team, and all of a sudden it all clicks into place.
I'm a one.
Oh, this is spoken like a man who watched a lot of Charlotte Hornets basketball.
Oh my goodness. I am fading Poppy. I am, it's not wave Poppy. It is fade Poppy. I'm waving goodbye on the Kelly Oubre experience as someone who was very big on like the Warriors a few years ago when they added Kelly Oubre and then watched them just completely turn like a shriveled up grape after like 2 days playing with Kelly Oubre. His on off negative, he's been on off court. So like there's a stat on Basketball Reference where you can look at his career numbers and see when he's on the floor, how many points do they outscore their opponent by. Sometimes it's negative, sometimes it's positive. And then they have this on minus off metric and they color code it for you. So it's very nice and easy to see. That when this player is on the floor, does their team perform better or worse? And for the last 5 seasons, Kelly Oubre's number is red, which means that it's making his presence makes his team worse from a statistical standpoint. When he's on the floor, they produce X. And when he's off the floor, they produce Y. And for each of the last 5 seasons, Dan, Y has been greater than X, okay? And Kelly Oubre, for a good reason. Like, Kelly Oubre is a black hole. When you pass him the ball, you are not getting it back. He has 3 assists in 179 minutes this year.
Dan, that's hard to do.
Like, even he plays with Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey.
Right, but. With all due respect, he's also Wave Poppy. And so, like, Wave Poppy doesn't need to pass. And in fact, given how well he's been scoring early this season, I think we might have to go back to Tsunami Poppy. Like, it's been an overwhelming natural Tsunami occurrence Poppy, okay. here. But what you're saying is based on past performance and the likelihood of things sort of reverting, you're maybe seeing this natural occurrence becoming a natural disaster.
Okay, so here's another stat for you. Again, the people who may think this is analytics. This is not analytics. This is just splits, okay? Kelly Oubre, in the month of October for his career, is shooting 37% from three. For the rest of the season, he's shooting 32%, okay? So what we have seen in historically and with the Hornets is he gets off to these great starts that make you believe and make your heart go a flutter. And you are just saying, oh, Wave Poppy, he's so beautiful. I love the way he talks all the time. He's a great looking guy and he's hitting these shots and he's just got this look to him that you want to root for this guy. But I've never seen someone talk such a big game and then like completely fall apart the other end of the floor. And he still talks. Like, usually you get a little bit humbled, you know, Dan, like you're talking a big game and then someone dunks on you and you're like, you know what? I should probably zip it. He doesn't have that reflex. He does not. He keeps talking and he will be the guy who is, you know, the Black Knight, where he's getting his arm cut off and he's just still saying, oh, it's just a flesh wound. Like, he's fine. And I just think Kelly Oubre is empty calories. He makes Cam Thomas look like Isaiah Thomas as a distributor. He is not someone that I want on my team. However, in October and November, great. Just don't think he's going to be like check in come April, May, and June, which is when they need him. When Joel Embiid is trying to change his legacy as a guy who's just a regular season performer and then he falls apart in the postseason and they're trying to get into the conference finals, check back then. And I'm sorry, Kelly Oubre is a very nice human being. I just think he's fool's gold.
I'm sorry, the scale, I just calibrated it and it says 5. So I don't know what to tell you here, Tom, but 5 Muggsies on the Kelly Oubre. We're going to go only one more here. So I'm going to give you sort of dealer's choice. You want to do a Luka one, a Cat Gobert one, or a Trey Young one?
Let's go Luka. Holly Luka. Let's do it.
All right. Oh, shouts out to our friends Jason Gallagher and Isaac Lee, my former coworkers. The Mavericks, 6-1. Top 5 in offense, undefeated in clutch games, and their best player is in the top 5 in the league in points per game and assists, and just outside the top 10 in rebounds while scoring more efficiently than ever. Scale of 1 to 5 Muggsies, Luka Doncic is the MVP of the league right now.
Okay, if he continues to shoot 40% from three, 100%. He is a five.
We're right? going to five. Yeah. Five mug. Forget it. We're going five Muggsies.
Yeah. I've heard enough. We're going five Muggsies on this one. We're going six. If he could shoot 40%, Dan, like Luka Doncic, if he's got that step back to a point where it is a Steph Curry move, the season's over, right?
Yeah.
Because it's unguardable. It's not like a thing where like Steph needs someone to help him get the ball. Like he's not a guy who can just ball dominate all 48 minutes. Luka can do that. And if he can just always go to this like step back thing, which is going to be a 40% shot, it's over. It's been incredible to watch him this season. Like take another step forward. I remember sportsoddshistory.com for like each of the last 3 years, he's been the preseason MVP yep. favorite. And he hasn't delivered yet. So maybe this is the year, but Jokic is getting better.
Which is and insane it's like, that that's
what
true.
Are we supposed to do with that? He's shooting 70% on twos. Jokic is shooting 70% on twos. And then, oh yeah, he's the best at everything else. You know, it's just like, what are we supposed to do with this guy? And Jamal Murray's hurt, and it looks like he's going to be out for a few weeks, which is a huge bummer. But there is an opportunity. We do this thing, the narrative thing in media, which is like almost it adds to your MVP candidacy, your campaign, if one of your teammates gets hurt and you maintain
Absolutely
a certain
right.
level. And so I think the Jokic MVP race will like heat up here, or his candidacy will heat up. But Luka certainly has a claim that like, oh yeah, like look at my supporting cast. And I'm not a believer in Kyrie as someone who's just time and time again had to deal with like, oh.
Wait a second. You host a podcast where you talk about opening your third eye. You're not a Kyrie guy?
I'm not on Basketball Illuminati right now, right?
That's true.
Code switching. This is what I'm doing. Okay. I have to remember my audience here is that like actual basketball stuff.
There is no audience here.
Wait, why did I wear this I voted sticker then?
That's a great
no
question.
Audience?
I don't know what to tell you.
Well, like I think Luka Doncic, Dan, is going to be in the MVP race. He's outstanding. He's 24 years old still, which is it's kind of crazy. He'll be like LeBron, yeah. where we'll be like, wait, he's been doing this for how long?
Right.
And from the get-go, like straight out of the box, he's been this good. So I hope he stays svelte. I hope he stays trim. It hasn't happened in recent years. It's very hard. Like he's a human being like you and I. We probably put on 5 pounds of just blubber throughout the rest of the regular season. And
I put
just
it on during this podcast. It's, yeah, I mean, it doesn't take me very long.
I think Luka is going to be up there. I'm going to go in terms of Muggsies. I'll go with a 4 Muggsies, 5 if he shoots 40% and keeps his weight off. If he eats well, if he says no to the late night hamburger from room service hamburger, the cheeseburger, I'm going with Luka Doncic.
I love that. And I love that also we wind up exiting this segment by saying, sorry to the Timberwolves fans and sorry to the Hawks fans. It's just, unfortunately, Tom Haberstroh's a hater and didn't want to talk about either one of your teams. So I had this whole great thing about how, like how you say French tall cats in French.
Do
it was
it.
Great.
It's
going to have to be a teaser for another time, Tom. This is how, unfortunately, the precisely calibrated instrument works. I can't go and I can't reopen it now. We've closed the book on the Muggsy scale for today. But before we close the book on Divine Intervention, we're going to go to something we call the closing five. Because, Tom, as you know, how you start and whether you start is not as important as how you finish. Five quick questions, lightning round style answers. So here we go. You love basketball. This much is obvious. What sport or sports did you enjoy or do you enjoy watching when you're not working? What's your go-to thing to watch when you're not working?
When I'm not working, sport I love to watch. I'm going to go with golf, and that is the most white Charlotte 37-year-old thing to answer here. There's something just zen about having golf on the TV. Maybe it's the fake bird chirping. But I do think it plays to my like analytical brain is just how the percentage chance of going for the green and doing this cost benefit analysis, and the fact that it's not a team sport, I can turn off my like team sport brain a little bit, and I can just analyze the pure individual sport. And, you know, and then there's like slam ball. Okay. So there's that, which is just pure. I know people are saying like the NBA might be getting too rock and jock. And I think Ethan Strauss has been saying that like with the in-season tournament, like, oh, it's too rock and jock. Like, come on, can we just get back to like pure basketball? I kind of liked rock and jock back in the day. It was fun, man. You know, like it was fun and it's a great diversion. We don't need to like, I don't know, like every time down the floor, no, we might not want rock and jock, but like as a diversion, as a distraction, as like, this is my side hustle. I would love to watch some rock and jock. We need to bring that back. Like who wouldn't want rock and jock celebrities playing basketball with 30-foot high hoops?
My only fear is that I don't know who our current Bill Bellamy and Dan Cortez are, but if we can locate and identify the modern day Dan Cortez and Bill Bellamy. So we'll have to get the scientists on it. We'll have to work on maybe a new scale to calibrate for that. But I'm with you firmly on that. Question two, you have, is it two small children or one small child?
Two
small children. What kids show or movie or whatever is most frequently on repeat in the Haberstroh household right now?
It is Encanto. It's Encanto. And I gotta say, it's, you know, we have a, Dan, when we grew up, we had what we had, like Little Mermaid, we had Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, some of the Disney hits. Mm-hmm. The soundtrack quality of today's kids, that you can just have Hamilton or Encanto or Moana on, like we have these Google speakers that just play Disney music all the time. And yeah. I don't hate it. Like, having Encanto on, the music, I'm a big fan of Pressure, and the songs are just, it's a great soundtrack and I'm okay with it.
That's phenomenal, wonderful choice. One thing I would recommend if you're ever in like, not a car chase situation, because I don't want you to be in any car chases, but if you're trying to get somewhere, really heightens it. If you play the score from The Incredibles, like my kids for some reason love the score for that, so we do that. And then of course, you know, you wind up getting a speeding ticket, which is not so good. Question three, you linked up with Meadowlark Media before the outside world really had much of a sense of what it was going to be, and you'd been at sort of big shops and big gigs, and then you sort of take this one. What was it like to take that kind of leap of faith on something that was, you know, you're building the plane as you're flying it?
Oh yeah, it was a tough decision. I had a couple offers for like legacy outlets. And then I was like, you know what? I believe in Dan Le Batard so much that I want to just do whatever. Like I think he is a great just writer. He's probably pound for pound the best writer in the business, which is so crazy to think, because he's a on-air pundit, but he's a brilliant person and a lovely person to be around, and just he's a great guy. So I was like, you know what? I want to hitch my wagon to him. And then it was gutsy in the sense that it's a startup, right? It's a startup. Yeah. And I've been part of a startup before and it crashed and burned, and it was a little bit tough as a family, like to have a family, two young kids, to make that leap. But what they're building, and this Lucy Roden, if you haven't been watching the Off Roden show from Lucy, it's like, it's such a joy. And I know this is all about joy on this podcast. Like watching Lucy has been a revelation. She just goes to these college football towns and just has an absolute ball. And it's so fun to watch just a slice of Americana, and just she starts crying from just how emotional she gets at how happy everyone is at football games, college football games. She went to Oklahoma State, and it's so great to be part of a team that like produces that kind of content. So it was a little bit nerve wracking, but Dan Le Batard is that good and that much of a force that I was willing to make that leap. And plus, it doesn't hurt to work with Amin Alhassan every day. I mean, some days not great, but I think
some days it might hurt, but I think broadly, right?
As long as we're not at a bar together, it doesn't hurt. If we are at a bar together, I am going to hate myself for a week. But Amin's just, I think, one of the most creative most brilliant minds that we have in sports media, a great dude. And I'm just so excited to be able to work with him and Dan and the whole group.
Okay. Question number four, we'll move from the Basketball Illuminati podcast and the Meadowlark Empire to you host a Top Chef podcast with our mutual friend, Kevin Arnovitz. It is called Pack Your Knives. If you were trying to get someone into Top Chef, like say, hypothetically, someone you're talking to right now who's never watched a single episode, where would you recommend starting and why?
Season six, Las Vegas, the Voltaggio brothers, Kevin Gillespie and Jen Carroll. That is, like, first of all, Top Chef is sports, okay? Top Chef is competition. It is not a Food Network show. Like, it's not like a food learn how to like cook things. Like, yes, you are going to learn how to cook some amazing dishes, but it is sports. It is pure, like 100% grade A sports. And that's why Kevin and I have had such a seamless, joyful time covering the Top Chef show, because it is like covering a sport. There's competitive, there's teams, there's points, there's championships. It's all just a construct that we are so familiar with. And I think the greatest season ever is the Las Vegas season with the Voltaggio brothers, season six. It's just awesome. And it's set in Vegas. So how can you argue against that? It's great TV. And we're going to be coming up on season 21, I want to say, of Top Chef. And season six or seven of doing Pack Your Knives.
Incredible.
Padma Lakshmi's left the show. And she was on SNL last week, which was great. Nate Bargatze and Padma was an amazing segment, skit that they did together. I love Top Chef. And I think we're going to have a really exciting upcoming season with Kristen Kish. Season six, what you got to do, Dan? Like, that's pure Top Chef. And it is awesome. It's great TV.
It's a great recommendation. And I cannot stress enough that you should go check out Pack Your Knives with Tom and Kevin. Question five, we'll get you out of here on this, or before our final thing. Tom Haberstroh, creator of the ALS Pepper Challenge. Can you explain what inspired you to start the challenge? And then also, what is the hottest pepper you have ever eaten?
Okay. To answer your second question, easy. Carolina Reaper, did it on live TV, Meadowlark Media. We did a 24-hour insane idea. Like, talk about sickos. We did a 24-hour marathon to launch the show. And we raised $8,000 in like 12 minutes. And as part of that fundraiser, I said I would eat a Carolina Reaper. It is no longer the hottest pepper in the world because it's been outdone by the creator of the Carolina Reaper. His name is Smokin' Ed Curry, and he's 40 minutes from my house here in Fort Mill, South Carolina. And he is he's a mad scientist that creates hot peppers. He just created Pepper X, which is now the hottest pepper in the world. Carolina Reaper, easy. Secondly, and I threw it up.
That doesn't sound very easy. Sounds awful and terrifying.
The answer to your question is easy.
Is easy, but
what is the hottest thing I've ever eaten? It is 400 times hotter than a jalapeno, okay?
No, thank you. No good.
Yeah, it came right back up. Like, it sat there for like 20 minutes. It literally took my breath away. I could not breathe. I could not speak. My voice was gone after eating this. My brain, all my faculties just shut down. ALS Pepper Challenge came about because my mother was diagnosed with ALS. It's a Lou Gehrig disease. It's a 100% fatal disease. In 2016, she was diagnosed. She passed away this past summer after an amazing battle against the disease. And as Norm Macdonald likes to say, she didn't lose the battle. It's a draw, you know, because you know what? ALS died within her too. And so it's not the sense, ALS didn't beat her because it died with her. So it's a draw. And I want to say it was the hardest thing I, as a human being, have ever dealt with, is having my mother diagnosed with a disease like that is 100% fatal. And it's devastating. It's a neuromuscular disease that is neurodegenerative, that, your muscles wilt until you can't eat, until you can't speak, until you can't breathe, finally. And it's a horrible disease. You're a prisoner of your own body. And my mom was like, hey, this sucks, but also let's change the world. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds very inspiring. And probably I'll never, ever have the courage to do something like this. And she said, I want to start a movement. So So my brothers and I, my sister, we came up with the idea of, you know, the ice bucket challenge was an ALS challenge back in, I think, 2016. Mm-hmm. And we want to do the opposite of that, which is the hot pepper challenge. So we created the hashtag ALS pepper challenge. You eat a hot pepper and then you nominate three people, record it on video, nominate three people, and so on and so forth. And it was so cool to see some of my friends and family do it. It was way cooler to see Charles Barkley do it. Way cooler sure. to see Kelly Clarkson do it. Jimmy Kimmel, Garth Brooks did it. But here's the funny wow. thing about Garth Brooks. He doesn't like eating hot peppers. So he drank a Dr. Pepper.
Dan. Oh, Garth. Chris Gaines would have eaten the pepper.
That's right. That's right. He would have. Shout out to Chris Gaines. If you haven't read it, the 90s book from Chuck Klosterman, where he talks mm-hmm. about Garth Brooks was the highest selling artist in the 90s, which I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn. Right. That is a great book. But the point is, Garth Brooks did it, kind of Shaq. We raised over $1 million for ALS research, Incredible. Which was amazing. And the fight is still not over. We still do not have a effective treatment for ALS. And I have this Substack because my mom inspired me when I was a kid. She used to call me the Finder. And so it is a homage to my mother, a tribute to her. When I was a kid, Dan, and we should use this in our arsenal as fathers. When I was a kid and I lost some, or my family lost something around the house, instead of going to look for it, they tricked me into believing that I was actually good at finding things. And so they'd be like, hey, Tom, you're the finder. Go find the set of keys that I lost. And I'd be like, ooh, yay.
Because a kid loves a job without doubt. Like having that responsibility, that task is a huge deal.
Yeah. And like, oh, Matt, like I'll do it now. Like I'll be like, Madeline, you're so good at cleaning up messes. I spilled my drink on the floor. Can you like clean it up and make it look as good at like new? You're so good at that. Yay. Where's the paper towels and the spray bottle? And so that was me when I was a kid. And so the reason why I started TomTheFinder.com was I wanted a place where I could write all my crazy musings and thoughts. And my mom inspired me to do that. And so ALS pepper challenge, habaneros, jalapenos, Fresno chilies, yes. Ghost peppers, yes. Carolina Reaper or Pepper X, just sit it out. I'm telling you, not worth it. I will eat a habanero for you if you ever want to do, you know, I'll eat their Carolina Reaper so you don't have to do it. That's the kind of person I am.
That's just the kind of person Tom Haberstroh is. Also, as a proud sponsor or proud subscriber to The Finder, I can have to recommend A, subscribing to it, but also B, a wonderful piece Tom wrote back in September called Celebrate the Wins that was about the experience of, you know, his losing his mother and reflecting on loss and what she had meant to him. I cannot recommend it enough. I know we often in this world, we talk about, you know, we promote our work. We promote the stuff that we think and say about sports. One of my favorite things always is when somebody that I really like doing that also lets us into their world a little bit. And it was wonderful of you and kind and brave of you to do that. So I want to point people toward that and recommend it heartily to them.
Thank you. Thank you. It was very difficult to write, but I was blown away by the response that I got from people who didn't even lose their parent to ALS. It wasn't about that. It was just
sure.
about loss and what it all means. And as a you talked about at the top, Dan, is like as a numbers guy, it's surprising to have you talk about something that isn't numbers based yeah. that brings you joy. Like that story, that article I wrote was very different than what I normally write. That's usually got a lot of numbers in it that I bring out a calculator and like, that's how I write. That this was a total different curveball and speaking from a different place than I usually write at. So I that means a lot that you enjoyed that and you took something from it.
I'm going to take one more thing from you today, Tom, and we close out our show with a weekly recommendation. It can be anything in the world. It can be I had, you know, Jason Concepcion recommended the Histories of Herodotus. Zach Lowe recommended. Of course he did. Yeah. I was like, amazing. way to set the bar really high, episode one, dude. Thanks a lot. I think mine was literally that week, read something. Like, just use your brain to read something that is not your phone or your laptop. You know, Zach recommended a book about facial recognition technology. Can be anything in the world that you think is cool and good and would help our readers and listeners enjoy their lives a little bit more. So anything, Tom Haberstroh, what is your weekly recommendation?
Okay, this book is called Who's Your Founding Father? And it's by Dave Fleming, who is a writer at ESPN. He lives just down the road in Davidson, North Carolina, the home of Steph Curry and the Davidson Wildcats. This book, one man's epic quest to uncover the first true declaration of independence, blew my mother effing mind. It is amazing. It's hilarious. He's basically a comedian. And I'm laughing throughout this book. It is about how the birthplace of America is a total, the whole narrative about it is a total lie. And the actual true genesis, the origin of America, the first place that actually declared independence from Great Britain is here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And no kidding.
You would never. I didn't know this. I moved here to the birthplace of America and had no idea. And he had the similar reaction, which was like, wait, what? But if you look on the flag of the North Carolina flag, it's May 20th, 1775. And that is the date that they declared independence from Great Britain. And it's an amazing story. It should be a movie. There's Joe Posnanski, my guy, who's on the back cover here, Wright Thompson. I mean, you name those two people, you know, it's going to be a great read. It's hilarious. You'll learn a ton about how Thomas Jefferson's a fraud, capital F fraud. And I know a lot of my UVA friends will be very upset about that, but you will not look at the American flag the same after reading this book. And it's hilarious and you should read it. And it's hard to make American history fun and funny, but in the same way that Hamilton did the same thing, where it's just such a joy to read or watch. Who's your founding father?
I love it. Wonderful recommendation. I'm going to go with a song this week. It is by a band called Warriors. It is called WTF is Sleep. It actually is spelled out WTF is Sleep from their 2017 record, Survival Pop. It starts with the lyric, "You'll feel better if you leave the house." And it is very jangly and it is dancey and it is upbeat, stomping bass line, great guitar riffs. And it actually is about how you work through your anxiety, which is something that I often have a hard time doing. It's part of why I do the show and make the show about helping one another and trying to find joy in things in it. So WTF is Sleep by Warriors. Lauren Denizio is a wonderful musician and I recommend people check that out. I also recommend that you check out The Finder on Substack, tomthefinder.com. I recommend that you check out the Basketball Illuminati podcast with Tom Haberstroh and Amin Al-Hassan. I recommend if you're watching League Pass, you're floating around, go check out the Trailblazers broadcast. You're going to see our guy Tom on there, making you smarter, helping you learn more about the game. And Tom, anything else that we can recommend for folks on the way out the door here?
No, that's it. You've done an amazing job. And thank you for giving the shout out to ALS. That means a lot. And if you'd like to make a donation to the ALS Pepper Challenge, it is ALS.net/pepper, ALS.net/pepper. If you'd like to help that fight, we have so many great people in this world who are fighting ALS right now. And it's just Sarah Langs, who covers baseball, has ALS right now. She is an amazing spirit, amazing person. And she has ALS and it's just heartbreaking. And if you want to, you know, find a couple shekels around the house and donate to the one of the great ALS research foundations in America, it's the ALS TDI Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We'd love for you to help. So ALS.net/pepper.
All right. Divine Intervention faithful, go out there, help, lend a helping hand. I know that you want to and that you're capable of doing it. That is going to do it for this episode of Divine Intervention. Thank you so much to Tom Haberstroh for taking all this time to be with us and to be with himself. Thank you to super producer John Gennaro for doing all the things that he does to make this show look and sound great. If you've made it this far, God bless you. Subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you're currently listening on. Leave us a 5-star review. It helps us grow the show and with discovery. Thank you for listening. We will see you again next week. Take care of yourself. You deserve it.